them.
What in God's name do you need a solvent for except to kill someone?
That's an outrageous slur.
Google it, mate.
The only way that you can preserve peace is to prepare for war.
Views on News with Mark Latham. Mark
Latham. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Pretty good, thanks. Trying to stay warm and out of the wind like everyone else.
Yeah, the wind, I just said earlier this morning, Mark, the wind came up where I was last night just almost in 60 seconds. It went from a nice evening, and next minute you've got 50 kilometres southwesterly winds blowing on the coast. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's been a real feature. Same here in southwest Sydney. So a good day to stay indoors and watch some footy.
Mark, I've got a question I have to ask you because I have had people send me emails and wanting me to ask you this question. With that result for your court case this week, are you intending to appeal that result?
Well, Alex Greenwich was unsuccessful in three of the four claims that he made, and on the fourth, my lawyers are looking at it with an eye to an appeal.
Okay, all right. Thank you for that. Donald Trump, Kamala Harris. They went head-to-head this week. It was an interesting hour and a half or so of television. All sorts of things came out. I just, look, honestly, sometimes social media is fun with some of the things that happen. Have you heard the latest song that they've come up with as a result of some of the things that Donald Trump said, Mark?
No, I haven't. Is this about the cats and dogs being eaten in Ohio?
Yeah, you ready for this?
Yeah, sure.
Have a listen. This is fun.
In Springfield, they're eating the dogs. They're eating the cats. They're eating the pets of the people that live there. They're eating the dogs. They're eating the cats. They're eating the pets of the people that live there.
People of Springfield, please don't eat my cats. Why would you do that? Eat something else. People of Springfield, please don't eat my dog. Here's a catalog of other things to eat.
They're eating the dogs.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
They're eating the cats.
Meow, 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 meow.
They're eating the pets of the people that live there.
And so it goes.
The
I think that's funny. The catalogue of other things to eat. Goodness me.
Well, I'm not too sure it'll be a chart topper.
No, I agree there.
It's given birth to 10,000 memes.
It has,
of course,
hasn't it?
Created a lot of humour. In the substance of it, who do you believe? Apparently the police there have investigated this type of complaint. It's in the realm of claim and counterclaim, isn't it? But certainly if it's happening, it'd be a huge worry, wouldn't it?
It would.
Poor old pussy and puppy inside.
Let's talk about, quite seriously, about the debate. I mean, I think Donald Trump was probably surprised at how prepared Kamala Harris was. I read somewhere, Mark, they treat these debates very seriously. Well, at least her side did. They spent 4 or 5 days holed up in a hotel preparing for this debate, even going to the length of doing up a couple of rooms like the auditorium with the lecterns there in the same colours and having someone dress up like Donald Trump, playing roles so that, you know, she can feel like she's in the room with him.
Yeah, it's a full dress rehearsal. Joe Biden was said to have had a week-long rehearsal. Didn't help him much. He was terrible and had to leave the race. But Kamala Harris, I suppose the spotlight was on her because Trump performed pretty well, as he always does. No surprises there. People said it was a catastrophe for him. I thought he was just the same old Donald Trump we've seen many times in these debates. But the spotlight was on Kamala Harris for her first appearance. And her detractors, of course, have put out material saying she was giggly, she was ditzy, she's a lightweight. You know, and there are some things there, quotes, clips, where she's said some things that, you know, kind of wacky and weird. But in the debate, she showed that the detractors are wrong. She can perform seriously. She had serious answers. I'm not saying she answered all the questions. She avoided them, like a lot of politicians do. But she performed way above the expectations of her detractors and many of the general public. So I suppose that helps her on the way through.
Trump has dismissed the support that came out straight after the debate by the Taylor Swift, saying that, you know, she was going to vote for Kamala Harris. What damage do you think that did to Trump after that debate?
Well, I don't think endorsements by celebrities do any damage. to a candidate like Trump. In some respects, they help him. He's running against the elites. He's running as an outsider to the political system, the people who've run the place for most of the last 40 years. So I don't think it hurts him at all. In Australia, Brent, if celebrity, academic, media, high-profile endorsements, John Farnham songs and the like were a guarantee of delivering the voice referendum, it would have won 99% to one. And it lost heavily. So the public is pretty sceptical about that, and most people would say, what would Taylor Swift know about American politics that I don't know? And I'll make my own judgment, thank you.
You know, the interesting thing about that and her post, directly in the next 24 hours after her post, 338,000 people visited the electoral website to register to vote. 338,000, for goodness sake.
Well, how they were going to vote, we'll find out on their election day. But there's no evidence that these celebrity endorsements are beneficial to Trump's opponents. It happened when he won in 2016, of course. Every single high-profile celebrity, all of Hollywood, was against Donald Trump, and he beat Hillary Clinton. So you've got to be careful about who's endorsing you these days.
The bounce in the polls, it was to be expected, was it? Would you agree with that or not?
I saw some material that the independent voters in their system, because you've got to register to vote, as you've just said, and you can register as Republican, Democrat, or independent. Independent voters, who are effectively the swinging voters, favoured Trump. So probably Kamala Harris's performance, I think, would have rallied the Democrat base. Maybe more Democrats decided to get on the roll and vote for her, having seen her performance. And rusted on Democrats already having made up their mind would have got firmer in their support for her. But the independent votes is pretty important, and Trump seemed to do quite well there. So, you know, we're going to get a lot of polls, a lot of speculation, a lot of analysis over the next couple of months through to the first Tuesday in November. And I think you've got to keep your powder dry before jumping to conclusions.
Look, George W. Bush, Barack Obama, and Donald Trump all went on to become president and lost the first debate. How important do you see these debates in an election campaign? And let's bring it back here to Australia, not just in the States. I mean, we all have these debates now. We see these debates now, and they're looked upon as an important part of the makeup of running for government. How important do you see these debates, Mark?
Well, from my own experience, going back a long way now, the pundits and the polls and all that said I beat John Howard in the one debate we had in 2004, but it didn't help me at all. It helped me diddly squat come election day, where Howard won quite convincingly. So what's the importance of them? I think debate's a long way from election day, as I had in 2004 and we've had the other day with Trump and Harris. I think the impact wears off over time. A lot of many more important things are going to happen in the campaign in the next couple of months in the American presidential election. So whatever impact rubs off, wears off over time, and sometimes pretty quickly. And other factors come into play. You know, most people vote pretty well out of, well, what, you know, what's in it for me? Am I going to be better off under Trump? Am I going to be better off under Harris? And they expect and probably mark down these debates as, that's what politicians do. There'll be a bit of squabbling, a bit of avoiding the true answer that should be given, a bit of role-playing, of course, given the heavy rehearsal that we know about. So, yeah, I think the public probably a bit more sceptical about the debates, and maybe they make up for 5% of the voting decisions come election day.
Speaking of voting and election day, angry Liberals, well, I suppose they had reason to be angry. Angry Liberals supporters, I see they were returning up to council elections with no Conservative candidates. They ended up trashing their ballot papers in anger with record numbers of informal votes recorded yesterday. The council elections again, Mark, for 2024 are now done and dusted, and we wait to see results. We know already that Clover Moore has been returned again. This is her sixth time, I think, as mayor in Sydney.
Yeah, she goes on and on like episodes of Blue Hills, you know, and she's got 38% of the primary vote, which in a big field is enough to get her home with preferences. So she's re-elected. So what do we get more those dreadful bike lanes? I hate them in the centre of Sydney.
Yes.
She'll think it's a mandate to do more of that nonsense and waste money. Elsewhere, the first point you made about the informal vote, I think, is sort of an earth tremor through the electoral system, Because even in areas where the Liberals stood candidates, they managed to get them nominated. You look at the Sutherland Shire, for example. In the ward elections there, the informal vote is over 20%. So it's not just areas where Liberal voters said, oh, well, you know, my hopeless party couldn't get anyone nominated, I'll vote informal and trash my ballot paper. In areas where they had Liberal candidates, clearly on the slate, not big fields, not a confusing thing, just put one in the box, over 20% informal vote. So, Brent, you'd have to wonder what's gone on there. I'd urge the New South Wales Electoral Commission to have a full review of this, to survey people as quickly as they can to find out why, in some cases, one in four voters were saying, I'm so cynical about this, I don't believe in this system, or I don't understand it so much that I'll vote informal and not exercise my democratic right to have a say about my local governance. So I think that's quite extraordinary.
Do you think people... We had a few phone calls yesterday with people saying, why don't local councils just get back to what they were supposed to be doing? And that's, you know, the old roads, rates and rubbish. Do you think people are still, I don't know, they just see their local council, you know, you've got to look after, as people have said, the roads, rates and the rubbish, and then move on from there, and that councils, local councils, aren't doing the job that people think they should be doing?
Well, I think that's part of it, but if you believe in the basics, vote for candidates who want to do that instead of voting informal. So that didn't show up. That sentiment didn't show up in the voting patterns we've seen. I've never seen election results with such a high informal vote. In the mayoral elections, like in Sydney, I think it was about 3% informal. Wallandilly, where I live, where they had their first election for the mayor, the informal was about 7 or 8%, but you went into the wards in Wallandilly, it's over 20% informal. So it's a very unusual circumstance, but in terms of what councils do, yeah, they have got away from the basics, no doubt about it. The idea that a local council with a climate change agenda is going to have any impact at all is a waste of ratepayers' money. And of course, all the Indigenous virtues signalling, campaigning and trying to retrain people about unconscious bias, domestic violence, all these things, social engineering of their staff and part of their population, again, is a waste of money. Councils haven't got a lot of resources. They're always saying to state and federal government, give us more funding, but they need to spend that funding on basic service provision that the ratepayers want instead of political campaigns that, quite frankly, are a complete indulgence and waste of money.
True, true. Let's talk about this ban in reference to social media. We have a tech segment, Mark, each and every Sunday morning. We talked a little bit about this today. I see in South Australia they're trying to ban kids from accessing the internet from the age of 14. There's been a lot of talk about it this week with the Prime Minister. And they haven't come out and said what age they're actually looking at in reference to this ban. I know there's been talk from 13, 14, even 16 was mentioned as well. What's your thoughts on this, the proposed ban on young people using social media?
Well, government's very slow in even having a response. It's 20 years we're into this now. You know, 20 years kids have been on various forms of social media and some cases getting screen addictions and going down the rabbit hole of all sorts of stuff on the internet. So we're 20 years into it. And you'd have to wonder why now is government acting. I think what's probably happened is that 20 years ago, parents, naturally, something new, undeveloped, are unaware of some of the dangers, they were caught on the hop. And there were some very serious problems. But over time, parents, responsible parents in particular, have become more aware of the issue about screen time, about internet content, about social media bullying and harassment and all those sorts of things, and they're taking the precautions you'd expect parents to take. So every child is different, every household is different, every relationship between parent and children is different. The best place to deal with these issues is through responsible parenting, of course. What can government do? A blanket ban, say, for every child under the age of 16, how enforceable is it, Brent? Mm. On one hand, the government's got a misinformation bill out there that's got some problems, but one good thing it's doing is trying to protect the privacy of children. But you blow that privacy away if a child has to have a facial recognition system with these American tech companies on social media to get into their site. If you don't do the facial recognition, which is a massive invasion of privacy, and it could be misused by these companies, no doubt about that, for commercial purposes, then, of course, you've got the issue that anyone can set up a fake account. They don't know how old you are, and the kids will get on anyway. So I just wonder how workable it is.
Speaking of the misinformation, the government is introducing legislation to Parliament to give the ACCC, not the ACCC, ACMA, the Australian Communications Media Authority, new powers to hold digital platforms to account and improve efforts to combat seriously harmful misinformation and disinformation.
Well, how many Australians have heard of ACMA? But now you've got a reality. If you go on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter today, and or in the future, if this bill was to pass, this mob called ACMA will be regulating and in some cases censoring the material you're allowed to look at. And inevitably with these government agencies, they'll lean to the left. There'll be a woke agenda in place. It'll be very political partisan in its approach, which won't be fair. Certain material will be deemed unacceptable. Governments are exempted, Brent. Albanese, was it misinformation when he told us the electricity bills were going to come down $275?
Yes.
Probably was misinformation, yeah. Was it? Because it hasn't bloody well happened.
No.
So governments have exempted themselves from this, so they can put anything out there they like, and apparently that's genuine information. Look, the best thing to do, of course, I welcome the fact they're going to have provisions for protecting the privacy of children. I think that's long overdue. But the best thing to do is don't treat the public like idiots. I mean, people who read this stuff have got their own intelligent mind. We're a better educated population than ever before. People are able to work out what's garbage on the internet, particularly with AI, what's nonsense, what's real, what's not. And treat people like adults is the best solution. I don't think we need anything in this bill other than the privacy protections for children.
There was a poll that came out at the beginning of the week. And I don't know, are there surprises here? Australians are holding Labor responsible for fighting inflation despite public attacks on the Reserve Bank. So all of the talk a couple of weeks ago by Jim Chalmers and Wayne Swan came out and said that the RBA were punching themselves in the face or something like that. Australians aren't swallowing it, Mark, and they still think that the Labor government is responsible for fighting inflation, and they're not doing a very good job at it.
Well, again, it's what Albanese promised before the last election. To get into government, he said, look, all the problems we've got with the economy out of COVID and Scott Morrison, we will fix. We'll fix them all. We'll have a high growth, low inflation economy, cheaper electricity bills, jobs everywhere, Australian-made jobs, and all those promises went on and on. So people are just holding him to account in saying that if there's a stubborn inflation problem, worse than the rest of the world now, and government has got rid of surplus budgeting and they're going back to deficit, well, of course, their big spending means that inflation goes up. And that's a deliberate government strategy. So, again, the public, people aren't idiots out there. They know what's going on. And holding the government account for inflation is just obvious common sense.
Mark, you're a numbers man. Why do the RBA want to keep inflation at 2 and 3%? What is the benefit to Australians?
Well, legally they're required to. There's an act of the federal parliament back in the time of Peter Costello, where the Reserve Bank was made to be independent, fully independent of government, and they've got an inflation target band of 2 to 3%. Why is that helpful? Well, low inflation, of course, stabilises the economy. It means you're not losing value in your pay packet when you go to the supermarket. It means that you haven't got constant extra wage demands and unrest in the industrial relations system. A low inflation, high growth economy is obviously the best outcome, and the Reserve Bank has that one job, to stay within the band. They haven't been able to achieve that. They made a big mistake when inflation pressures were building out of the COVID period and they failed to act. That was when Jim Chalmers and co. should have been hopping into the Reserve Bank, not now.
I saw a post on social media by a real estate guru during the week, and he was talking about the RBA and inflation and the fact that, the 13 interest rate rises and what people now are having to pay and what they were paying, 2 years ago, and the price of coffee going up. And he was saying that, do you really think if you get inflation under control, where you go to pay for your $6 cup of coffee, if we get inflation under control, it's going to lower the price of coffee? Is it going to lower the price of goods in the supermarkets? Maybe it was a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek, but I thought to myself, he's probably got a point there. I mean, get inflation at 2 and 3%. The place that charges you $6 or $6.50 for the cup of coffee and say it's as a result of inflation, they're not going to lower the price of the cup of coffee, Mark.
Well, 2 to 3% prices are still going up, aren't they, in the CPI. But it's manageable. It's thought to be an acceptable consequence of a strong growing economy to have 2 to 3% inflation. And I think that's the correct economic judgment. As for the bloke paying $6 for his cup of coffee, he needs to shop around a bit. I can still find $4.50. So have a look around, mate, and maybe you're in the wrong suburb. I don't know.
Dear. Your thoughts on the aged care reform with the federal government that was announced this week?
Well, I think we need more self-provision, don't we? I mean, the ultimate answer, there's some very high-quality nursing homes, aged care homes in the system. A lot of effort was made about 20 years ago to have more inspections and quality standards enforced, quality assurance, and I think that's got rid of the rogue operators by and large. But, you know, in an ageing population, we just need more self-provision, and the messing around with the superannuation system, of course, has been the biggest disaster in that regard. So I'm not too sure government's on top of this problem, and in the end, of course, where government fails, people have just got to look after themselves.
I see the federal opposition leader's Dutton's takeover of the New South Wales Liberal Party, they say, is under threat from a rearguard action by the state leader, Mark Speakman. I don't see him winning this argument, Mark, do you?
No, well, they haven't got very good credentials. The problems that they've had with some of their MPs, the debacle in local government nominations, and there was a rearguard action by the left wing of the Liberal Party, the ruling left wing, so-called moderates, but some of them are as green as the Greens Party, to restack the committee. There were two Victorians. They thought, oh, we can get two New South Wales women on there, moderates, but our people. We've got a chance to sort of, you know, go back to what we used to do and run it. But Dutton's intervened with that. John Howard's come out and said that they just need a committee of three. The two Victorians will have the numbers effectively, and obviously it's not really an intervention unless some outsiders to your state branch have got the capacity to fix up all these problems.
John Howard, speaking of him, and Tony Abbott, two ex-PMs, have come out in only the last couple of days and have said that they feel that Peter Dutton really does have the potential and, you know, the momentum, if you like, to win the next election and make Anthony Albanese a one-term government. Do you agree or disagree with those comments?
Yeah, I saw some polling. I don't know if it's been made public, but someone I trust sent me some polling seat by seat during the week. And in the last 3 months, Albanese has declined sharply in Labor-held seats. This was two-party preferred and seats that might have been sort of 56% Labor, you know, fairly comfortably held, not really a marginal seat. They're now down to 52, 53. So the trend is against Albanese. Dutton, of course, I think has been fairly effective in highlighting the problems of the federal government. But I think the bigger factor, Brent, is all those promises that were made. The longer Albanese's in government, and if he goes a full three-year term, the more people will say, you've had plenty of time to implement all those promises you made. And things have gone in the opposite direction, so we'll vote a different way. I think that's his difficulty. It's not really about Dutton. It's about Albanese's failure as Prime Minister to do all the things that he promised.
Just before I let you go, it's footy finals. The Panthers, the Storm and the Cowboys, they're the winners this weekend so far.
Yeah, it looks like a Panthers-Storm grand final. They look a cut above the others. The game last night was pretty entertaining up there in Townsville where the Cowboys beat the Knights. I've suggested the Knights should be renamed Ponga plus 12 because he's an incredible footballer. And really is the best hope for Newcastle. Not even he could pull off the win, although he did set up a try that one of the centres dropped the ball. So it wasn't Ponga's fault necessarily. He was incredible. But I think everyone's expecting in the NRL the Storm and the Panthers will play the grand final. Whereas over at the AFL, which I've watched some of these fascinating games, the Lions-Giants game last night where the Lions came from an impossible position behind to win. And the night before, another thriller between the Port Adelaide and the Hawks. So I'm not an AFL person, but I think their games have been a lot more entertaining because they've been a lot closer.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's great stuff. It's a good time of the year. And I've got to say, with this weather, it feels like footy time, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it? Now, the match this afternoon in the NRL is the Bulldogs and the Sea Eagles. Come on, Mark. What's your thoughts?
Well, the Dogs have got a lot of problems. They've been flogged their last two games. Addo Carr's out for reasons that have been well publicised on the back page of every newspaper, so it's very disruptive for the Dogs. Yeah, and Turbo's back for Manly, so you'd have to say Manly are the favourites to win that one.
All right, mate. Good afternoon to sit and watch footy on the telly. Thank you for spending some time with us each and every Sunday morning. We appreciate it. Have a good week. We look forward to talking to you next week.
I look forward to that. Thanks, Brent.
Thanks, Mark. Mark Latham.